After the No Tax for Tracks folks announced their presence yesterday, the real battle has begun now over a big tax increase and light rail plan that the mayor hopes to convince you is a good deal, because you'll be voting on it in May. The Beacon Center of Tennessee is going to be holding a forum on January 27th. I'll be the moderator for half of the forum. Justin Owen, president of the Beacon Center, will be the moderator for the other half. It will be a three-hour forum featuring six panelists, including Mark Scribner, senior fellow at the Competitive Enterprise Institute, who joins us now. Mark has a focus on transportation, land use, and urban growth policy issues. So Mark has been studying these kinds of things for most of his professional life. Mark, good morning, and welcome to Nashville's Morning News.
Good morning. Thank you for having me.
Happy to have you, and look forward to seeing you on January 27th. You make the point that Nashville is actually too small to enjoy the benefits of the best benefits of light rail. Are you saying that light rail can make sense, just not when the city is too small?
Well, light rail can theoretically make sense in very narrow circumstances. Nashville's problem is not only its relatively small size. It's not a small metropolitan area, but it's also not a very large metropolitan area. But another problem is the urban form of Nashville is very auto-centric, and the density is very low. So combining the already limited pool of potential riders due to the relative smallness of Nashville's metro area with the low density, light rail just simply cannot work here. And I can't imagine any scenario where the return on investment of Nashville light rail would be positive.
If our density is too low, why do we have such massive congestion coming into the core of the city every morning without fail?
Well, congestion has increased in Nashville. It's certainly not in the top 10 most congested metropolitan areas, but there has been, in recent decades, the Nashville downtown has densified. That is true, and congestion has increased as a result of that. But it's important to note, and the rail in general, whether you're putting it on the surface like light rail or if it's underground like the New York subway, it works very well in getting people in and out of that urban core. And the problem for Nashville is that most metro area jobs, 80% of them, are outside a 3-mile radius around city center. So you really,
to me, that's actually good planning. I'm glad that is the case. We don't need to create an even bigger problem by focusing all of the workforce in the smallest core of Nashville, even if other cities have done the same thing.
I think that's true. I mean the fact that Nashville is auto-oriented isn't unique. Most cities that grew up in the years following the invention of the automobile have similar urban forms, and that's just the way of life, and land use patterns have evolved to allow people to live. Generally speaking, people are looking to spend about 30 minutes commuting. So when you have a faster technology like an automobile compared to, say, a streetcar line, which was the previous fast urban transportation technology, still people generally want to spend about 30 minutes commuting. So as speeds increase under the technology or under the infrastructure, you're going to see more what some people derisively call sprawl. And that's what we've seen in Nashville, and it's very difficult to put the genie back in the bottle. The idea that Manhattan is unique. It was built up over several hundred years, well before the automobile, and that's why you have that form now. And it certainly makes sense to have subways going into Manhattan. But Manhattan is a unique case, and we shouldn't expect every city to try to turn itself into Manhattan.
Yeah. Now, you believe automated vehicles are going to be a better solution, and that's going to happen it's going to happen without the mayor or tax increases or anything else. It's happening, and it's going to happen, and all of the biggest, richest companies in the world are competing to be the ones that make it happen and to make money off of it. So the investment is there. Does the promise match the investment?
Well, I think it does. The question is when this technology will appear. And I think it's likely we're going to see deployment within the decade. And that's another problem with the proposed Nashville light rail system, is that you're making a bet, and this would come online within around the same time frame that many expect automated vehicles will be deployed, but then you're stuck with it for 30 plus years. I think people often, when they're voting on these types of initiatives, if they have the opportunity to, they need to keep in mind that it's not just the upfront costs, and the upfront costs are generally underestimated by 30 to 40% of what the final cost will ultimately be. But then there's that ongoing operations and maintenance cost that you are stuck paying for decades after the initial, construction costs. And what you're seeing here with the proposal of the sky-high tax rates to do this, and this is what I think some of my friends on the left should understand, when you're raising taxes that high, you're basically approaching your taxing capacity. So that means if you want to do all sorts of other projects, other sorts of public expenditures, you basically can't, because you've hitched your cart to this one mega project that you're stuck with for decades.
I was doing a little writing yesterday on the subject with about which we're having a conversation with Mark Scribner on the right now. It's about 10. I think it's about 10 years away, probably, before we're to the so-called driverless cars. Here's what I wrote, and I'll see what Mark thinks about this. Before the first passenger can ride Mayor Barry's train from Gallatin to downtown Nashville, autonomous ride-sharing vehicles will be at work in Nashville and other cities, operated by Uber, Lyft, and smaller startups competing with Uber and Lyft. Every major world player in the auto and tech industry are investing billions in the race to create the first best autonomous vehicle, with the intent of the first fleet being ride-sharing vehicles before people buy them for individual transportation. The driverless ride-sharing vehicles will not employ a costly driver and will therefore be able to deliver multiple passengers to their individual locations while allowing them to either work or play on their way to work, and deliver them almost as quickly as if they were driving themselves for about the same cost without government subsidies, and still make the company a profit. Driverless limos for about the same cost as gas and parking will still deliver workers to central Nashville, but with fewer cars on the road, carpooling will finally be popular and far more effective than light rail. It will also happen quicker. Back to the phone with Mark Scribner, senior fellow at the Competitive Enterprise Institute. Did I get anything major wrong with that statement, do you think?
No, I don't think so. I think that's a very accurate, or at least I think that's a very solid guess of what we can see in the coming decade. I do think it may even be cheaper, substantially cheaper, for people to take an automated taxi service versus driving themselves when you factor in the cost of owning a vehicle. So I think that's one thing. And there has been, this is all guesswork at this point,
sure,
since this technology isn't deployed. But the preliminary modeling done by the University of Texas made some, I think, reasonable assumptions. They assumed, for instance, that an automated taxi would cost more than four times what a current manually driven taxi costs. But also, they said, well, if we were to charge 50 cents per passenger, per passenger mile in a two passenger shared taxi, a private provider, given that more than four times cost of a vehicle, could still earn a 20% return on investment by charging that 50 cents per passenger mile, which is about a third less than typical taxi rates right now. But importantly, that 50 cents per passenger mile is below the typical operating cost of a light rail system. So, that excludes the major upfront capital costs that go into building out light rail track. So I think that really what this shows is that we're about to see a major revolution in transportation, and betting on a technology of the past, which never really made a whole lot of sense, even at its peak, is just a really bad idea.
Mark, we're going to have to stop there. The other thing that I think shows a lot of promise, and I expect this to expand even more rapidly than it has in the past, and that is telecommuting. It's already The number of telecommuting jobs increased 115% between 2005 and 2015 to about 2.9% of the total workforce. Now, I expect that to get to 10% of the workforce in the next 10 years. I really do. And that may be pie in the sky thinking. But if it's even close, it's going to take a lot more cars off the road than all of the mayor's light rail system will all by itself. So.
Absolutely. And I think advances and all of those advances are coming from private investment.
Exactly.
The telecommunications industry spends $70+ billion of its own money building out its networks,
Mark,
without costing the taxpayers.
Mark, we have to stop. Look forward to seeing you on the 27th. Thank you so much. Have a great day, and we'll talk again soon. Mark Scribner, senior fellow at the Competitive Enterprise Institute on Nashville Morning News.